Banks, it says $1,280, but under NELK, it says we could negotiate that amount down. 1,280 acres in the Angoon area represents an area 52 times as big as the community of Angoon right now. We don't feel that the city of Angoon needs all of that much land. We've made a first draft of an agreement between the corporation and the city. We've gotten copies to the city. We want to give them a chance to review it and our people a chance to review it. Then we plan on sitting down with them and try to negotiate an amount hopefully lesser than the 1,280. We don't see any big problems with it. City Council is made up of local shareholders of natives, and a full board, of course, is made up. And so I think we could probably reach a favorable compromise that both parties could be happy with.
Well, there's just one other subject I might as well raise with you, since you speak with authority on all of these questions, obviously. But is there anything you'd like to say about limited entry? I only mention that because it has been suggested in other places that we've been that that limited entry led to a reduction in the number of permits that were available to Indian fishermen, and that some of them have sold their permits. And so the suggestion has been made that this illustrates what could happen in 1991 with people's shares. I don't know whether I'm making clear that what's been suggested in other places, but do you have anything you'd like to say about that?
You're speaking possibly to the only non-fisherman in all of Angoon. I have, however, been involved with the local Fish and Game Advisory Board, and I do know that the numbers run high in Angoon against limited entry for a number of reasons. One of those reasons being that limited entry was put together to benefit the big organized fishermen. Our people in Angoon, for example, rely on fishing, but are not accustomed to keeping good records. And so every time they throw a limited entry proposal on a table, they go according to how much you've invested and how much you spent, and they go by your past records. And so in that way, a lot of our people have lost out.
Chance. I didn't have enough schooling myself. I didn't finish fifth grade. But our Tlingit law, we have a Tlingit law that we respect and we don't change it. We made our law not to hurt any people, our Tlingit nation. But now they begin to make laws for us. See, they, as I can see that the white people are pretty shaken now, 1991, about the stock. Supposing if we start making laws for them, I wonder how would they feel. This is a shame. I would say this is a shame. My feelings is that leave us alone.
I have a daughter who is studying archaeology, and I have an office secretary, and I have a nurse. I could say I have an educated family, but we sacrificed quite a bit to have these children return back to school and get their degree. But there's no room for them. There's no jobs for them in the village of Angoon. My son is working for the State Department of Fish and Game on subsistence. My oldest son. He has to travel an awful lot. He just comes home maybe 2-3 days out of a week, and then he has to go to Anchorage or Juneau, Sitka for meetings. But his office is the state office. So my family that I willed my stock to is living away from Angoon, and it's a problem that I'm facing. And a lot of other families are the same. We have our young people going away to colleges. Once they get their degree, they find a job in the urban areas of Alaska or down south. So we left with just the elderly people who is having a hard time to express themselves in the English language, but they can say it in the Tlingit. George Jim Sr. is the man I mentioned last night, the family that comes from the Cube Cove area.
And so, like the common said, you know, somebody sat back and thought about it philosophically and came out with a justification on why they didn't want someone to come in and improve their way of life. That their way of life is, you know, been here for thousands of years, you know, don't screw around with it. So I thought that was great. Of course, it didn't hit me right there at that moment. But after I thought about it a while, I thought, that may be an approach that a lot of people, nations, and all should sit back and look at. But then that's basically, at least in my mind, that the subsistence use of the resources is probably the, this is not professional, it's probably the best use of the resource. That I don't see how Western man or the rest of the world can sit back and advocate or participate or acknowledge or spread out the commercialization of the resource. Because basically in commercialization of the resources, what you're doing is getting as much as you can, as fast as you can, to make the biggest profit that you can. And that subsequently, if you don't have a multitude of laws that prohibit and people can get around those laws, then basically you're going to screw up the rest of the world, because you can't take out of one area a hell of a lot of things and keep taking out of it without putting something back, which is why I got into salmon enhancement and rehabilitation with fish hatcheries, quote-unquote, because I thought it was a positive thing. Some other things I can get into, but that's something else.
Well, go ahead.
it's more of a, at least in my mind, in terms of how Western man views the world and how Alaska Natives or Native Americans view the world.
Well, I want to hear about that. Well, this is the time of night when we start, we become receptive to that kind of talk.
At least it's recognized that it's only in my mind.
Oh, sure.
And,
sure.
And I threw it out every now and then. Especially to people who are in power positions in Alaska, or come up to me and say such and such, or about Alaska Natives and all. And how do you think about this, or what do you think about that, in terms of being a person in today's world, or Alaska Native in today's world, or with state government, or with a profit-making corporation, or isn't that bad, or isn't this good? Why are you fighting your own natives on keeping them off the island? They're Tlingits, and they should be on there. generally the discussion goes around to how people view the world and why they view it in certain ways. And I believe, and certainly I can be wrong, but I think that most people view the world in the same way at one time.
Holy cow, I put my sweater on backwards.
Through the same eyes. And that the world is here, and like most Native Americans, and I'm not knowledgeable about all Native Americans, so the world as having all having a spirit and all having a being. And not to say that, you know, we went out and worshiped them or anything else like that. And certainly, you know, many elders, like my father says, you know, we never worshiped the trees or the totem poles or anything like that, or killer whales. But we looked at the world through eyes of somewhat equals, that everything had a spirit and everything had to be somewhat acknowledged. And the world gave you or provides you and your family and your people with, you know, food, sustenance and all. And you have to respect that. And I think Western men probably also saw it, you know, the same way. I think there's one big difference though. And I think the difference sort of comes in with when man made God in his own image. That sort of gave him license to sit up and look at the world, and it gave him somewhat the license to, you know, to do what he wanted to with the world. And that sort of, you know, sort of puts man, God that he made, sort of up there. Trees and animals and the other resources, maybe, you know, different level down there. And it comes out all the time. It comes out in just comments that people make, like, God didn't put these trees here just to look at. You know, manifest destiny, a lot of things have developed. That's not to say that Christianity or Western man and all their values are bad or wrong, because they're not. There's a lot of good or values that are somewhat universal and are seen or viewed as good. But I think just from where, quote and unquote, people look at the world from where they're perched, gives them a lot to or predetermines what's going to happen. Certainly if you respect things and look at things as having a spirit or being, then you're on a place where you're not saying it's all great, because it isn't, but I mean, there isn't any, you know, we have a tendency to talk in extremes, but certainly things would be out of balance, and that you don't go off and kill every bear you see. You don't go off and harvest all the timber in the woods. You don't go off and, you know, do anything to an extreme. When you look at the world that way and you respect it and you see that it's providing you with a way of life and your kids, and that somewhat is a balance of use and somewhat non-abuse. But Christianity, along with work ethic and worry how you look at the world, sort of, you know, gives you a license to do that. I don't know what else to say about it right now. My wife's starting to flicker, and I got to go work, too.
Go work now?
Yeah, I got to go help work, and, well, not work for, I'm going to go halibut fishing, which is a three-day thing. That's
3-day opening.
Yeah, 3-day season, just about.
Well, Mr. George, thank you very much for coming down and giving this testimony. For the record, we've been holding this session of the commission at the Sally, for the record, we've been holding the this evening session of the commission, May 20th, 1984, at the Klusnahu Inlet Lodge.
the kinds of conflicts that are not one of designating profit or non-profit, but one of separating people as individuals and their beliefs. And I think that the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, as it is structured now, is not one that is in concert with the Native culture. I believe this issue was brought out in more than one testimony, so I won't expand upon it. And I think that is a significant weakness, because the kinds of leadership that we had in the past are very different from the kinds of leadership that are needed in today's business society. I think that when you look at some of the reasons why Ketchikan was excluded from the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, you'll find that there are that it is a result of a lot of bad information. One reason was that that was given to the people was that the population of Ketchikan is not made up of more than 50% natives. If you look at least the urban corporations, you'll find that they also do not have 50% or more native populations, but yet they became corporations.
I'd rather give up my child than to see my child in two. And to me, that's the position we as natives are in. We've had a choice to sell the land, which we don't believe we own, or to give it up for a mere sum of money. We've taken a mere sum of money and we've given control of our land over to another in order to preserve that land. And I think if there was any wisdom involved, then we would still have that land. But we have given it up. I think it's a fine choice. As my grandfather said, we're Americans now. And I'm proud to be American. It's a good country. It's the Constitution is one of the finest pieces of paper in the world. And we'll go on, but one thing we have to remember is that America's only had Alaska for 100 years. America's only been in existence for 200 years. And when all these pretentious claims are gone, then we will still be here, regardless of what money has been spent, regardless of what papers have been signed.
I think perhaps mine is more philosophical than anything else. You probably heard enough about the history of, at least in our involvement here, it was another friendly judge that came on the scene, Judge Wickersham, said that you'd better go out and fight for your land. And I know for a fact that one of our, one from Ksen, Willard Jones, now living in Ketchikan. It is one of our former members of Ksen that
where the deer were, and also the goats and that lived in that area. And that was all cut out. And then they moved into the Kaufman Cove area, and that was all cut out. And now the deer, finally, in many years of living in Ksen myself, last year was the first time we had deer roaming through the village. And they're not cutting right in around the village, they're cutting over on the other side, where the deer population was very low anyway. And they very seldom even see deer in that area right now at this time. You go through that and you talk to the people and hunters, that's where you find out things. You don't get it from a Forest Service man sitting at a desk or a corporation man sitting at a desk or anywhere. It's a man that goes out and hunts the wood, that the woods that comes back with his stories. And if you listen, you can pretty well know where that is. And most native corporations are people. It's not a corporation, it's the people. They stop and think, well, our deer are out there, let's set that aside and save it for them. And they're doing this. It's not something that you're going out there with native people and just cutting a tree down because it's a big cedar tree. They don't do that anymore. I mean, it's money, yes, but there's a lot of trees sitting out there that we can't even cut. Mm-hmm. And another thing, I don't know if you've looked lately, but out there on Prince of Wales Island, there's something harming our trees. It's bad.
Well, I don't work for the Forest Service, so.
It's getting to be a real bad problem.
Mr. Thomas, sir.
Okay, I just wanted to, I'm not directing questions, I just wanted to
write some things. Right. Yeah, that's fine. Thank you, Mr. Smith. I think we've logged that particular area over now.
It's there's so many stories that floats around as to what the intent of the act really was. I probably wore out several copies, and I still really don't understand it. I know that I've been involved in numerous court hearings on in sections of the act that there isn't a judge in the state of Alaska that would render an opinion or ruling on any one of the areas of the act. It would have to go back to a federal court for a determination. It's been a field day for attorneys and consultants. I feel that they've been using fear tactics and say that if we don't do this or don't do that, we're interpreting something wrong, so we need attorney legal advice or accounting advice or consulting advice. And it's a fear tactic, and I think that I kind of got off base. I was starting to mention the fact that we lost track of what our people really wanted in terms of the contents of the act, and I think that we ended up seeking advice from consultants that weren't right, attorneys, legal opinions that weren't really correct because they don't understand the act, and I think that the capabilities of the native leadership or the native people in general, I have a feeling that every one of them knows the direction that we needed to take or what they really wanted in the terms of a settlement.
Number 8, the interaction and integration of Native people with non-Native people in social and economic activity has begun to show basic improvement. Certainly some jealousy and envy impacts have been felt, but we believe will decline within the next few years as the community-wide benefits of ANSCA becomes more apparent. Number 9, ANSCA has provided Native people with business and economic experience. Dealing with profit circumstance as well as losses experience has provided a hand of appreciation, understanding of asset management. We are still learning in these areas and some of our lessons have been expensive. In the eyes of all our people, particularly the young ones, the need and an opportunity for higher education has grown. These perceptions have, to a major degree, have been fed by a corporate activity that provides a sense of pride and hope, as well as displaying to the older shareholders a clear understanding to the benefits of higher education.
So there's a lot of important forces in our life that this land claims affect us in different ways, each family a different way. And they can't exactly voice out what they want for their family. We expected the first time there that they were talking about the land claims there, each family was going to benefit from this land claims there, but it's not so. The people as a whole right now, that's getting the benefit out of it. And the people there that even then, it's only the people there that's running the corporation.
That this act was even perpetrated, brought about, was by the large oil companies, the real estate, the bankers. The oil, the gas, do you know we have 500 trillion cubic feet of coal in one area in Alaska alone, enough to keep this country going for 200 years? There's no telling how many trillion cubic feet of gas that we have. They burn off every day. Fishing rights alone that we gave away. You know that we'll be using hydrogen, that water out there, for power. And when aquaculture, the farming of fish, sea life, that we took for granted, seaweed, everything that comes out of that ocean. In the future would be, like we say, the food, who has the food, can buy the guns, who has the gun, can take the food. A comparison to this was the Cherokee Nation.
All they do is knock you down. All they do is talk behind your back. They don't talk to your face. But let me tell you this, the reason why I sit here and want to testify, even though I'm not taken and I'm not Haida, is I've given of myself to this community for 10 years. I have given up what I have in Nevada to live here in Saxon. People may not believe in what I do or not understand what I'm trying to do. But I still have my family here, and my roots are here, and I will work for this community until the day I die or the day I move. So while I was sitting there and I was listening, I realized I did have to come forward, I did have to speak, and I did have to say what I had to say. And I welcome anyone, if I'm wrong in any of these facts, to speak up and straighten the facts out. But as I said, I'm married to a Tlingit Indian. My husband's name is Edwin DeWitt. I have my roots here. I've actively supported and worked for the city of Saxon and the community of Saxon for a number of years. We have two daughters. One of my daughters is 13 and one of my daughters is 5. My oldest daughter is a member of Sea Alaska, as is my husband. Personally, I'm very much concerned with ANSCA and the fact that the corporation represents only those people that are members of the corporation. In my family, my husband and my oldest daughter, as I mentioned, are represented, but my youngest daughter has no voice.
You're used to push-button TV, you're used to radios, you're used to vacuum cleaners, you're used to microwave ovens. What are you going to do? Go back and build a campfire and roast your duck over it? That's fine if you want to live that way, but how many people are going to do that anymore? How many people can really do that? I live a village type of life because that's my choice. My children are raised in the village type of life, and I've got muscular young bodies growing up. They're good kids. We have no dope in our community either. That's because that's the way we live. We go out and catch a fish, we put it in a smokehouse, we put it in a can, we gather seaweed, we dry it, we dig clams, we use them whatever way we can. There's nothing in the world tells me I can't go out and do that. But it's up to the individual to do it. There's no act of Congress, like I said before, that can do it. That takes care of that, but when I sit and hear people say, I want to be an Indian and live back like that, there's nothing telling them they can't. Go do it. That's what life is about now. Go do what you want to do. Like I said, there's a saying my father used to tell me, unto your own self be true. I believe that. What I am is what I am. What I made myself to be is what I made myself to be. I had a high school education and no further, but I know that there's many things I know deep inside of me. I can sit and close my eyes and remember certain Native people that I used to call Nana and Chana and Craig that taught me many, many things. I brought it back when I married my husband and we moved to village life. I brought those things back out of the depth of me in memories that were there. I remembered seeing them, how they sliced their fish, and I remembered how they laid their clams, how they did these things, and I did them.
So it was then accepted, I take it, that you were and are Aboriginal peoples of Alaska.
Yes. It was believed that Tsimshians were strictly in Canada, in British Columbia. We were able to ascertain through professional research and anthropological finds and things like that. And we do have people sitting in this room that have a better understanding of that. But we were able to ascertain that we did have settlements and camps within the boundaries of Alaska. And because of that, we were included in the act, but we were opposed quite extensively for a while until we were able to prove that and get that amendment passed.
Yeah. And at the, excuse me,
at the time of ANCSA, the people of New Metlakatla decided that they would not participate in the settlement. About what percentage of the Tsimshian people of Alaska live in Metlakatla?
I can't answer that right now. I'm not sure what that percentage would be. That there's some truth in the fact that there are 1,100 off the island people, it would be less than 50%. A lot of natives lost their right to fish that they had previously had. And natives were good fishermen, and many people, many, many Southeast natives made a living. I myself fished for 11 years, and I'm fairly young, but almost all the elderly people I know that were members, say, of Metlakatla, relied on fishing and the fishing industry. I believe Kluwaks lost a lot of boats. Other communities throughout Southeast have lost a lot of boats and a lot of permits to fish. That's really nothing to do with the land claims, but it's just the overall attitude, the fact that we can lose, and we do lose power, and we do lose rights and privileges. And it's been a continuous trend for 150 years now. Well, more than that, you go back to the days when natives had the whole United States, and they lost large tracts of land in trade for beads and guns and things like that. And it's been eroding at a constant, ongoing basis. I don't see any reason why it should turn around or why that trend should stop. History's just shown us that it's not going to stop.